Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. Welcome back from lunch to the next panel here in Hamburg at the Capital Link Conference. Pleasure to have you here. I think it was an inspiring day so far, so we hope we can continue on that one together, looking at themes of innovation, progress in the shipping industry. My name is Christian Finn. I'm as a partner of Watson Farley and Williams. I'm happy to share this panel here with five experts in the ship finance space. Great to have you all here. I do believe we have a number of topics to tackle, but the Capital Link team didn't give us a lot of time for that. So to dive into the conversation, I would like every one of you to just give a brief introduction, who you are, what you do, what your role in the shipping finance space might be, instead of me telling how great you are. You can tell it yourself. So Martijn, give you the start.
Martijn Vertel, part of the ship finance team of First Citizens Bank. I always joke First Citizens is the U.S. Sparkasse in ship finance. Headquartered out of New York, 14 people, $1.4 billion portfolio, and looking for business. So you'll find me in the back later.
Yeah, Zoran Bibo, Group CFO of Heron Group, being a family-owned ship owner here in Germany, based in Bremen, and having also investments or being the owner of SL Heavy Lift, and heavy lift multi-purpose operator, as well as Interine as U.S. liner business.
Yeah, Maximilian Otto, I'm the director of IG Capital, which is a capital advisory arm of global shipbroking firm IFCO Galbraith. We focus primarily on arranging debt and leasing structures for ship owners.
Moritz Fuhrmann, co-CEO and CFO of MPC Container Ships. We own a fleet of roughly 60 feeder container vessels. We're stock listed on the stock exchange in Oslo since 2017 when the company was incorporated. And we as a company have a pretty transactional DNA, meaning we've been buying and selling around 150 ships ever since being established, which also means there's a lot of work to be done on the financing side.
Good afternoon. I'm Irakli Sirigodis. I'm director of origination for Neptune Maritime Leasing. We started Neptune about three and a half years ago. We had just under half a billion in exposure, and we'd like to grow it much more in the years to come.
Excellent. Thank you very much, gentlemen. I do believe it's a quite interesting, diverse mix of backgrounds we are having here on the panel. So let's do the best out of it. And to give it a start into the conversation, more on a general question, what have you seen as significant trends in the ship finance space over the last 1 or 2 years, quite dynamic years, I would say, and maybe Iraklis, give it a try to explain what are the trends you have been seeing over the last 1 or 2 years?
I think that's pretty simple to answer. You know, the markets have been good or very good, so ship owners are basically either deleveraging their books, repaying off facilities. So that's very healthy and prudent. And in terms of our business, which is in the ship finance space, obviously there are lots of challenges to grow because, as I said, the requirements and the needs of the ship owners nowadays are not that great, given all the things that we know about the market. And therefore, usually... we see lots of competition, lower margins, looser covenants in facilities, you know, the typical things that I'm pretty sure most of the people, if not all the people in the room, have seen the last few years.
Okay, so no, is the new trend as such, I think, is more the trend we saw recently. So, Moritz, is there anything you observe differently from that one? So
no, I would say pretty much the same.
Yeah.
Obviously, very much to the liking of Zura and I. Being in a fine spot right now, we all know shipping is as volatile as it can get. So let's speak again in 3 years, then the market will look different. But obviously, for now, there's ample liquidity on the owner side, so less demand for the typical high leverage financings. And on the bank side, with all the prepayments that the banks have been receiving in the last couple of years, there's also ample liquidity on the bank side. So we have a bit of a disconnect between demand and supply on liquidity side, which then obviously leads to tight pricing, loose covenants, as Iraklis just mentioned. And, you know, in a current environment where you look at asset values, historically speaking, you are close to peak values. It's always a delicate situation to be in from a bank's perspective, right? Because you don't want to take too much risk. But on the other side, you're also driven by, you know, making your business and earning some upfront fees.
Okay, so then as we try to look at the evolving landscape of shipping, let's give it a twist in your direction, Max. So I think you look at the market a bit from a different way than we heard so far. So maybe you can combine your outlook generally also with the question, is there an impact of technology? Are you seeing ideas of using digital financing solutions, things like that? I think probably you're well placed to give it a spin in that direction.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, just a comment maybe on what we observe at the moment is absolutely in line with what Moritz just said, margins down, risk appetite up. But also there is a shift probably from the Asian leasing, Chinese leasing side, also looking into non-recourse structures, what is interesting, which for sure hasn't been there a couple of years ago. That's very much driven by high prepayments and also by the pressure to deploy capital. On the technology side, I mean, there's nothing really super exciting at the moment, I would say, that is looking like a big shift is happening. I think where we all would favor some innovation is probably in the documentation process, which maybe is more your expertise, but I think it's cumbersome still to wrap deals up, and for sure there are interesting technology being developed to make the contract forming process of the deal more efficient.
Okay, the panel is not about lawyers using AI, but we definitely look at all these opportunities, I can promise you. I think, Zoran, I think also your general view on that one, technology-wise, not sure if that is something you're looking into.
You meaning technology concerning
how do you deal with your financing? Is there anything support of the recent development technology? You're using anything you do differently than from back your days in the bank? So it's
sure, we're doing it differently, but at the moment it's an owner market. So at the moment, frankly speaking, it's simply you can sit and wait. It's not the need like 5 years ago where you probably would have needed such a technology to may find another financier that is willing to go into a smaller transaction. For us, it's much more the discussion about strategic investments and how do we find partners, not for a market where at the moment everything is going great. And for sure, as an owner, you have a lot of equity on your side and you can push the banks wherever you like, so to say. But I mean, that's a very short-term view. So if I'm on a non-recourse situation, simply trying to make an asset play, sure, perfect thing to do, but us being an operator and thinking to secure for our cargo's room for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, for us it's at the moment much more the question what is actually also the need of financiers 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road. And so there is a big difference for us as we have a lot of discussions with our financiers also to understand how can we be interesting for them in 5 years where may the markets have changed and again everything is a little bit more complicated.
Martin, what's your response to the owner market?
It's definitely an owner's market, and all of us, all the financiers are competing for fewer business with people that already have a lot of money. We have our advantages and disadvantages. The disadvantage is that we will not compete on the risk profile. And given that, we've applied a lot of product innovativity, if you like, on will provide revolvers on the ship basis. So we make use of our own unique position that we are long natural dollars, so people can borrow with us, prepay, redraw, no penalties. That is how we try to be different in this market. So not necessarily a technology advantage, but a little bit of a product innovation. There's ample financing from China, which is powerful, can do big tickets, are close to shipbuilding, are marketed by a number of intermediaries. So we try to carve out our own space by being innovative, very flexible in what we offer. Don't concede on a risk profile, so not every deal is for us,
mm-hmm.
and be absolutely number one in terms of pricing. We're destroyer of all margin. So this market is partly because of us, because that's how we like to compete.
Okay, so that's interesting to hear probably from some old employees.
So you mean we get the old one, what was it, 133.8 or something? Wasn't it the old margin for kgs?
So if Show best price, it won't match.
So here, it can be a term sheet later. And we heard risk as a word in one or two of the contributions to so far. And of course, you are the financial institution here on the panel. And you say you're not taking any risk, but how is generally your feeling of and risk appetite was mentioned earlier? How would you say is the risk associated with ship finance today? Has it been changed? How look you at this topic?
Listen, it's a lively debate at the moment. I was in ship finance 15 years ago, and things were low margins, cough light, high values. Everybody was doing super duper. So there's a lot of similarities from the past. So we're actually quite careful what's going to happen next. It is still a volatile industry, so things will come down. So we're vigilant when it comes to the risk profile. Doesn't mean we don't take risk, because otherwise you don't do business. But we're more careful in choosing counterparts, in choosing structures. So we don't do every deal. We're quite careful.
So recourse, non-recourse?
We do non-recourse.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, interesting. Iraklis, maybe you can also shed some light on the risk view you're taking.
I'll share very much an echo to what Martijn just said. So I don't have much to add there, but there is one point that was mentioned before that I would like to get back to about the ample liquidity in the industry, which is true. We all know that, you know, most ship owners are cash rich. They have quite a bit of reserves, and banks and other financiers in general are struggling to find business. That's for sure. However, that's, you know, a tree in my world, while the forest, the picture for the forest is very different. And let me give you some very simple math just to get my message across. You have a fleet that worth, let's say, $1 trillion, plus or minus. Nobody has the perfect data. War fleet. If you apply, you know, a reasonable inflationary metric to that for the next 10, 20 years, and new technologies, which are much more expensive, that fleet probably will cost $1.5-2 trillion in the next 20 years or so. If you apply a modest leverage on the fleet, which again, historically, that's around 60%, nowadays probably it's less than that, you need more than $1 trillion, give or take. The total capacity in the banking world, and including all the leasing houses, it's a fraction of that at the moment. I will argue whether it's more than $500 million. So simple math, you need about $500 million. You need about $500 billion in new capacity, lending capacity, to come to the business, to renew the fleet and modernize it. Because if we don't have the capacity, what's going to happen is we'll be sitting here in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years. The average age of the fleet will go from 12 years to 13 to 14 to 15. And we'll be looking and saying, okay, where should I invest? Things are expensive, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the big picture. So yes, there is ample of liquidity. However, we think there is a huge shortfall in the long term, which is a very, very different concept and to look through.
And if you order a ship now, obviously you look not just for the next 2, 3, 4 years. I think it is long-term asset, maybe not your investment.
And I would like also to hear the views of the two ship owners on the panel, because I met a very, very large group recently. We went through the exercise of a massive order book they have. And I asked the question, okay, if you had to finance all the order book with bank debt, can you do that? And the answer was no.
Yeah.
I cannot raise more than $1 billion so easily as it was like a few years ago.
Yeah, and maybe I would have turned also to indeed Moritz and Zoran on that one as well. Maybe combining that with your strategy, how you look at your future plans, with what we heard from Iraklis and Martijn, Moritz. Maybe you can also help us understanding your views there.
I guess one answer would be to say that, again, shipping is cyclical, and that means that a trillion can be 500 billion in a matter of months. So that obviously changes the picture as well. And what we've seen as well on the liquidity side again is that in some decades you have the bank lending taking the lion's share, which I guess will always do. In the last 10 years, you have seen a lot of, and similar to what you guys do, you have seen a lot of capital coming through alternative lending schemes into the market, obviously higher price. And for example, another example would be right now, the bond market is extremely open. Mm-hmm. So there's also ample liquidity available for shipping. I mean, I'm not saying it's always available, but I'm sure liquidity will find a way into shipping in one way or another.
Yeah, and of course you're
can I challenge that a bit? Because,
yeah, of course.
Sorry. Because since 2008, bank capacity has decreased significantly. You know, we're talking about, you know, close to 100 billion or so. And since 2008, one particular region, China, has absorbed that gap and actually filled that gap and even did more than that. And now they have an exposure of 150 billion. Nobody, again, has the perfect data, but that's roughly the numbers that I have heard recently coming from China. So bonds, bank debt, relatively, these are small numbers. A billion here, a billion there, 3 billion here. In the greater scheme of things, these are small numbers. That's the challenge I like.
No, of course, but also turning back to Moritz, I think you're taking care of your fleet, obviously, which I think probably is not that huge in terms of amounts, what Iraklis is rightly pointing at. So you're active in the container market, obviously, and sorry there. Would you say there is some sort of particularity when it comes to financing container ships? So is there, are you see difference when looking around to other segments?
It always depends where you are in the cycle, and arguably containers is again in a very good stage, which means that there's also good charters attached. If you have cash flow visibility, then there's bank debt available. So right now, container is doing fine. I guess LNG, a similar story. Dry is struggling a bit, at least for the time being. So it might be difficult to get kind of the same leverage margin structures that you see right now in containers. But I mean, from our perspective, we've been going through a restructuring in 2020, and lesson learned is for us that to keep the leverage as low as possible. Keep a high degree of the fleet unencumbered. The fine balance that we have as a public listed company is that we need to return capital to shareholders. So we've been cranking out close to $1 billion of dividends to shareholders in less than 3 years. And comparing us to the private owners, especially here in Hamburg, that has similar fleets, that's money that they have on the balance sheet, right, ready to invest. And then again, talking about the future and fleet renewal, our fleet is on average 14, 15 years of age, which is fine, but you need to do something. So it's always a fine balance between, keeping a low leverage, keep paying a dividend as long as the market is good, but also have liquidity to renew the fleet. And that eventually means for us that we will incur some higher leverage relative to where we are now. And I'm not concerned looking ahead in 5 years that there's a shortage of liquidity.
Søren, obviously you are, so far I know, have no container vessels, but no. Much more diverse fleet in bulk is offshore segment, multi-purpose. How you would respond to that? What say? How you see market trends there?
I think two remarks. First of all, I think liquidity will always follow the return. So in that moment where you see that shipping is in a very interesting industry and returns are, compared to other industries, are higher, you will find other capital to be deployed or employed. For us in special, as being more in the multi-purpose heavy lift market, so meaning actually in the infrastructure, so our core business nowadays is assisting the world in the transition of energy. Mm-hmm. So from that point, we're having two mega trends that are both working into shipping, one a little bit more for us, maybe not so strong for the containers, but also will, and the other one is clearly the willingness of the EU to be CO neutral. And really it does not really matter, look into any vessels that are in the market. If you really want to be neutral, it will be nearly impossible with that fleet. So this fleet has to be renewed or the goals have to be changed. But for sure that's too early to see where it goes. But one thing for sure, to renew the fleet, I don't see the big problem at the moment in where do I get the liquidity for to pay. It's much more the question, where do I find places in the world to produce those kind of very high-technic vessels? I mean, this, we are talking about a total different kind of vessels. We are looking into our last new builds, the Orca class being probably for the heavy lift market the first vessel that could go CO2 neutral. It was very difficult to find a yard that really can cope with this needs that you have to come to that solution, and you need a very strong engineering team, and that's again for Heron, as having more than 80 engineers, maritime engineers in the group. Even for us it was a task, but if I may, would say medium-sized shipping company without all of this technology knowledge and not having this access as we have to large energy companies like Siemens or Vestas, all of those, I have really no clue how to move your fleet to that direction. And it's not a question of liquidity, it's simply a question of how do you want to build those kind of assets. And if you're not asking that question, then you also will not have an issue with liquidity to deploy.
Yeah, so it turns into the next topic I would like to raise with you, because that is really the outlook, how may the future look like, and Max, I know you at Go Venture, you are looking also in that one, understanding the market in its range. So what are your thoughts sort of on that one?
I tend to agree with what Moritz said, that at the moment we see ample liquidity and outlook is that debt capital is available for all sorts of projects. For sure, we see from the large corporate banks and also from Chinese leasing a focus on modern eco-tonnage, new buildings, and support a transition and renewal of the fleet. But it's good to see that there's alternative capital stepping in to also finance older assets which still have a place in the market. And to see also a lot of new solutions to retrofit vessels to where charterers might step in actually and provide funding solutions to ship owners to be able to install energy energy saving devices. So I think the capital markets or the debt capital market is creative and find solution for where capital is needed. So I wouldn't be too worried about how the renewal of the fleet is funded.
Yeah, thank you for that. And maybe also turning to another angle of ship finance, our evolving landscape we are looking at is obviously still all what is driven by sustainability, by ESG, green financing. Martijn, at FCB, how are you looking at that one, or are you just trying to be good in the margin and grab the deal?
So we were sort of unique that in the US environment we don't have any hard pressure. So we don't subscribe to Poseidon principles. We don't have especially since today, not an overly active government that presses on green. So we're sort of left to our own devices, and we formulated a very simple principle. Fuel saving is good for the wallet, because you save just a lot of money on saving fuel. So green for us is the greenback, is the dollar, you save money. And as long as owners are incentivized to keep saving fuel, then we're happy to finance. So we don't discriminate, we don't go out of our way to find a green project. It is the entrepreneur that takes the decision. They're incentivized economically or through regulation to do certain things, and we facilitate as a financier. We're not dictating what they should do. We follow, we don't discriminate. That is how we approach it.
Okay, so interesting to hear. And Zoran, I think we just recently did a lot in the offshore space, so that is, to an extent, the assets you're acquiring relates to wind farms, offshore wind farm, things like that. Is that a particular focus of Harren Group to get more, become more green and attract green financing?
Yes, for sure. We definitely can say that. But that has to do with two things. First of all, as we are with SAL in this industry, it's very important also for our clients. I mean, if you are transporting the offshore wind park modules nowadays worldwide, for sure, your client is also asking you and approaching you, is asking for, can you go with biofuels, et cetera, et cetera. And also, if you're then presenting a new fleet, it is very interesting. Secondly, we also have in the offshore repair business, two units, and so we also work with sustainability funds. We did green lending with European banks, and I really did not feel discriminated, so to say. It was for sure an interesting exercise in the beginning, but at the end, when we went through the whole process, I really had to figure out it simply fits to the goals of the company. It's a structured way to describe. But it's not a situation where I do say, looking into our general goals as company, that it does not fit. And for sure, you can't decide from one day to the other, now I'm green. So for sure, we also have our second-hand vessels where we have to take other measures, where we for sure are looking for banks. And I don't have until today the feeling that it's totally difficult. Where it's getting very difficult, interesting-wise, is with insurance companies. So even we had situations where we were not able to give a performance bond for a transport of an oil rig because that's too dirty. Such a situation I never have seen with the financier. With export financing institutes, I have seen that.
Okay, that's interesting to hear. And Moritz, I think, as we heard, your setup is different from that of the Harren Group, but I think, how are you looking listed in Norway? How are you looking at the green financing space?
I mean, we have a pretty clear articulated ESG strategy, which includes also a carbon emission reduction target. We have been beefing up internally teams. We have been heavily investing in, you know, certain new building technologies. We have three methanol dual fuel vessels on order. We would like to get exposure also to other propulsion technologies, not knowing which is the right way forward, but just to have exposure, meaning ammonia and LNG. We've been heavily investing into retrofits of 20 old ships, where we improved the efficiency by 20%. So there's a lot of stuff going on that we do because we believe in it. It's not that we try to paint the company green, because as Søren said, it's the fleet is big and you have old vessels that will never be truly green assets, but you can do to improve. And you know, from a carbon emission perspective, it's probably better to retrofit an older ship than build a new one, because carbon emission building a ship is quite intense. But I think it all goes back to the question whether your investment is financially sound, regardless whether it's green or not. And if the numbers make sense, then let's go for it. And on the financing side, we have been structuring a green financing earlier this year for our new builds. And we just raised a sustainability-linked bond a couple of weeks ago. On the green financing, obviously, you're hoping to get a benefit on the margin if you do something innovative. But again, you know, if the bank is not getting an equity relief from the regulator,
what is there to pass on to the owners, right? So it's, we're right now in a situation, at least with some banks, where you structure a new product, a green financing, but you get the same conditions as you would get for a conventional vessel. So you, from an owner's perspective, you are, at least in some instances, you're not really incentivized from the debt side to invest into new technology. On the equity side, we are, because we structure the deals with long-term charters, so there's a risk sharing. On the debt side, I think there's still a way to go, which is fine. I mean, we make the projects work. And I think it's also around that trends come and go, especially ESG has been a bit of a buzzword during COVID times. Now it's a bit muted, but I'm sure it will come back. We structured the sustainability linked bond. The people invested because it's a good company and the story made sense, not because it's sustainability linked. But who knows, maybe 5 years down the road, there's a benefit of having done that now. But again, I think, you know, everybody needs to work hand in hand when it comes to, you know, if you truly believe in the green shift and you walking the talk. It's not only the owning side, it's also the debt side that needs to help to a certain extent. And again, I understand also the bank's perspective that why should they compromise on profitability if there's no equity relief from the regulator? Why should they lend lower margins if they take same risk or even higher risk because you pay a higher price for it, for example, a methanol dual fuel ship?
Yeah, so and I said you both, Zoran and Moritz, correctly, there are other stakeholders which are looking at your ambitions to become more sustainable, more green, but not necessarily from the financing perspective.
No, I wouldn't say so. The banks are also looking into that. It's more like Moritz said, we for sure would wish that this also would have an effect in pricing. So the effect in pricing is, there is one, but it's minor.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, and I think that's more the long term, so I totally share Moritz's view, in the long term, the classic banks that are in the Poseidon principles will come to a situation where if you are not doing what Moritz or also we are doing already, they will simply say, sorry, we can't go with you any longer because it does not fit to us. Closing the gap from what we talked about, volumes, so that will really narrow down the volumes of European banks, bringing the financial part of ship finance in Europe compared that has shrinked unbelievable over the last 10, 15 years, even to a bigger stake of problems. So having now already China as the biggest financier, for sure, Europe with all of this regulation, even that it makes sense, and don't get me wrong, but it for sure gives a very complicated time for European financiers for the future.
And Christian, let's not forget Basel IV.
Yeah.
Which has not been discussed a lot and will have an impact in the next few years, mostly to Northern European banks. So, again, there are big challenges ahead, which are not widely discussed. Of course, they are mentioned here and there. But in essence, if you look very simple, what happens, again, I will go back to the point I've made already, to the banking capacity in Europe specifically, is not increasing. It's either stable or decreasing.
Yeah, thanks for that. Max, hearing from these perspectives, what's your analysis of the...
No,
market.
I think that's true. If you look at Europe as a lending market to shipping, for sure. I mean, we've seen a lot of consolidation, which is not necessarily good for the ship owners, of course. It's nice to have more options. But I think that will continue and agree that the European banking market is faced with more challenges compared to the US, for example, where Martijn, of course, is looking forward to the Basel IV implications, and the Chinese as well, which are very eager to lend to also European owners. So then that would bring us to the question of kind of geopolitical exposure that European ship owners are willing to take if they're primarily borrowing from non-European institutions.
Thank you for that. That's very interesting. And just from the more general standpoint into the green angle, I think the last few moments I would like to use to speak about leasing as a particular structure in financing. Iraklis, if I understand your business model correctly, not just the name of Neptune Usury. That the only financing model you're offering is leasing. Can you briefly explain a bit the reasons, advantages, and how the market is perceiving your offer?
I think leasing nowadays is mainstream. Again, that model was tested very much because of the Chinese leasing houses over the last 15 years, so it became mainstream. In terms of volumes, it's larger nowadays than mortgage bank loan. So that already changed, although still the mentality is to think that anything that's not a bank loan, it's alternative. But again, talking numbers, things have changed. And basically what it does, the leasing model, is it gives you much better clarity on who is responsible for what, where is the securities registered. You know, basically, in a sale leaseback, you know, we become the lessor, so you know, become the resident owner, and there is a variable charter back. So that's a bit cleaner kind of form of finance, except of course a bank loan. So if you compare other structures that you know you could potentially apply, this seems to be one of the cleanest forms. Plus, it's scalable. That's another thing. Because you know the something that is you know hardly talked to is most of the growth that came from China, the Chinese houses. The fact is that these institutions are being leveraged by Western banks, not as shipping, not under shipping loans, but more as financial institution facilities. So that's also kind of a different concept. So yeah, that's in short of.
And so, Moritz, was your experience with leasing? Are you happy to see that as a tool to finance your fleets comparable with a typical debt financing?
I would say if, you, if you're looking for high volume, high leverage, long-term charters attached, no covenants, it's a pretty appealing tool to have. If your structure is differently, I mean, if you're not looking for the high leverage, if you have you know less charter coverage and you want to have some flexibility, especially in terms of trading in and out of assets, then it becomes a bit difficult because leasing would like to keep the leasing structure in place for at least the 7 or 10 or 15 years they have planned it to be. So I mean, obviously, the most compelling part is the no covenants part. I mean, there's no LTV clauses. But you know, we have one leasing structure that we done last year, and one particular problem that we're facing now is in regards operationally. It's in regards to EU ETS. So it's a European domiciled company that we sold the vessel to. But they can't open a compliance account. We would like to do it. We're not allowed now. The technical manager have to be able. So it's. I spare you the details, but it's becoming really really cumbersome to deal with those issues, right? I mean, there's the financial part, and if it makes sense financially in your Excel model, it's all fine. But you also have to think about the operational challenges that comes with you know selling your vessel to a lessor.
So Ren, what's your view?
Yeah, also from my side, I can't see so much benefits in that structure as just mentioned. I mean, on certain things, it simply makes sense. If you have a tax-related thing, then you simply need it. Then there's no discussion about it, and then you have a benefit for both sides. If you're talking about a long-term structure and it's off balance, yeah, sure, why not? Especially if you then have no covenants. In the moment where you have a situation, and it doesn't matter how you structure a lease, at least for a German company, it's a special lease, so it goes right into your balance sheet. And if you see, if you would put a larger number of your fleet on balance into lease structures, it totally destroys under the German HGB the picture of your balance sheet. And I really can't see the benefits looking, if I don't have the tax advices, for actually the borrower. So because at the end, it's highly complex. You have many, many hours of discussions and documentation. You have often the problem that the lessor is not willing to take over the obligations of the owner. So you are discussing about things that simply is, if you are the owner of a vessel, you have certain obligations. It makes the documentation very complex. It is not very flexible for anything. We have all the issues around tonnage tax. Do we really structure it in a decent way? It is somehow a modern tool because in China it was the thing to go. Simply you were following the liquidity to that stage. And then it was adapted from people where I do really ask myself why it simply makes it complicated.
But then have you, as SCB, do you have a view on leasing as such? Is that are you financing into leasing structures?
Yeah, we love leasing because they're our clients.
Yeah.
So so leasing is an efficient way to do high leverage finance from a low source perspective. If I want to give a really high leverage loan, the lease structure is optimal because I already own the ship. There's no discussion when they stop paying, I already own it. That is a very efficient way of keeping sort of control in a high leverage situation. So you see a lot of leasing structures on a non-recourse basis with clients that have not necessarily a big balance sheet like CERN. He's like, I just take high leverage finance and I don't have to surrender my ownership for that. We love it because many a lessor will come to us and say, hey, can I get a loan into my ownership? So we help them bring down the average cost of capital, and we like it very much because now I have two sources of equity keeping me whole. It is the lessee paying the lessor, and it's the lessor paying me. So there's two individuals, two parties in the structure that keep me happy, because otherwise they have a problem. So leasing platforms, we that is a big part of our business. So we like that. And it is more efficient than somebody giving a high leverage loan and says, can you do the senior portion? We'll do the junior portion. We did that 15 years ago. Because now you have to mess with intercreditor agreements. If something goes wrong, when does the junior give control to the senior to start working out situations? The lease structure is super efficient in regulating that because you have a real owner. There's only a senior loan agreement. There's a lease. So we like them, but from a business perspective. If you're an owner, it really depends on whether your own balance sheet is strong enough to do high leverage borrowing, or whether you are a smaller owner that has a great opportunity, but you don't have enough equity, so you basically take a high leverage loan, and then the lease from the lessor perspective is the optimal way of doing it.
Yeah, so very diverse views, which is interesting. Max, final word on leasing?
I think it's from a borrowing side. I mean, we have a lot of discussions with clients on that, and what is surprising is quite often the emotional aspect of not being the owner of the asset on paper. But I think operationally, except for what Maurice has just explained, it feels very much like a loan, and the documentation looks also very similar to a loan documentation. So I think it's and for the reasons that Martijn just explained, I think it's there to stay. It is more efficient, and in the end, the owner is benefiting because these leasing platforms can offer more competitive terms to the owners than if we do high leverage loan structures.
So, trying to close almost in time, not really, sorry for that. Iraklis, just your last statement to the audience. What would you recommend the audience for the next few years to think of when it's about ship finance?
Well, in the short term, everyone knows that, again, things are fine and there's ample liquidity. So, looking more at the medium to long term, if we want to basically renew the fleet, make it more efficient, we need to make incremental steps in that respect. And those steps, we think, are going to be expensive. You will need more debt capacity. And as I said, we think that there is going to be a scarce of capital availability for what is needed in the years to come. Everything is fine now, but let's not look just the tree, let's look at the forest. That's the message.
Maurice, your outlook, your advice to the audience?
I I believe that, I mean, textbooks aren't textbook answer is that I believe capital markets are efficient, so where there's demand, there will be supply, but from a liquidity perspective. But I'd say, you know, just looking at us right now, we're in a pretty decent spot. I would only recommend using that strength that you have now to broaden your horizon when it comes to the lending space. Because again, shipping is cyclical, and you never know when it comes in handy that you have built the relationships already now in the good times. And then, you know, when you're really in need of the relationships, then people will be there because shipping is people's business at the end of the day.
Max, your word of advice?
Yeah, I would agree. Diversify your lending base. I think now is a very good time to go out into the market and try to build new relationships. And who knows what it will be good for down the road.
Thank you. So,
what can we say? I think we repeat ourselves for the third time, but it's exactly what what's the time to do, right? Find new partners, keep out, have relationships, and be aware that shipping is a cycle market, and for sure the likeliness of that the market is going down is higher than going up, as we had some quite nice years looking back.
Anything to add, Martin?
Moderate leverage. Don't. That is that. Whatever market you'll find yourself in, make sure you have moderate leverage. So you can pivot, and make sure you have optionality. Whether it's in your loan agreement or in your lender base, that's always the advice to a borrower. Just come to me with room to negotiate. I don't mind.
But then we destroy your second base with a high leverage on leasing.
I do either primary or secondary.
That's it. Here's your term sheet, so you can continue on that one. So thank you very much to you all here on the panel for deciding to share your insights with all of us here. I think it was very interesting, inspiring, and gives a lot of food for thought. I have no idea if we have a chance, Nicolas, for questions or not really. Okay, sorry for that. So hopefully so you find those guys for your questions. Thank you very much for listening to us, and thanks for the opportunity. So,
thank you.